From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight is the apocalypse at hand. Here's what's happening. Although the U.S. intelligence community early on dismissed the notion that the coronavirus was a made-up bioweapon, it is still now weighing the possibility that the pandemic might have been touched off by an accident at a research facility rather than an infection from a live animal market, according to 9 current and former intelligence and national security officials familiar with the ongoing investigation. What a story. After extensive research, the scientists in the U.S. and elsewhere have determined that the new strain of the coronavirus discovered in China in December is, as Chinese officials have maintained, of natural origin. But they are taking seriously now that its route to human infection may have started in a lab in Wuhan. A Chinese laboratory at the center of these new theories about how the coronavirus pandemic started was the subject of multiple urgent warnings inside the U.S. State Department 2 years ago. U.S. Embassy officials warned back in January of 2018 that inadequate safety at the Wuhan Institute of Virology lab passed on information about scientists conducting risky research on coronaviruses from bats. Dr. John Curtis is with us, online columnist. And John, 3 weeks ago, we were talking about this, and people said, nah, it can't be.
Well, guess what? They do read the columns that I write. I guess that's really what the story is here. But I think the issue for most people right now is not only has China caused this problem. Now, they, you know, claim that the U.S. planted the virus there. This is their foreign ministry saying we planted it there. The U.S. military did it. But everybody knows that the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom, basically knew this in December. And yet he was obligated himself. He's a patsy, a proxy of Xi Jinping that brought him into that job. Xi's wife, Ping, worked at the World Health Organization as a goodwill ambassador for many years. So, and there's been, you know, all the money that China's invested in Ethiopia, where you know, Tedros is from. So he's totally obligated. So what did he do for his friend Xi? What he did was he kept a dirty secret that was going on in Wuhan, which was they had this out-of-control spiraling epidemic that was about to jump all over the world, and in fact did jump all over the world because Tedros was asleep at the switch, keeping the secret while millions of Chinese tourists traveled to Europe, the United States, and every other country on the planet, you know, that's a vacation destination for the Chinese. Now, the laboratory issue, let's clarify the confusion that came out in the kind of more conspiratorial areas where they said it was a lab-manufactured virus. That was never the case. What I reported to you was that they were experimenting in their bioweapons lab with a virus that was derived from bats, basically, and they were infecting laboratory animals with them, pangolins in particular, to see how they responded. Once they were done, the workers at the laboratory basically sell those animals into their wild animal market, and that's where the consumption, this is into the food chain, they were infecting humans and created this massive epidemic in China. And the Tedros, who was just Trump just announced today that he was pulling the funding, U.S. funding, thank goodness, on the World Health Organization for the atrocity that they have committed. We're talking, I mean, look at the casualties that exist and the loss of, you know, the loss of human life in the world. Not only that, but the $30 trillion off the world's gross domestic product, plunging not just the U.S., but the world into a depression, not a global recession, but actually a depression. And, you know, Wall Street just goes about its business, you know, doing what it does, while we've got 15 million people filed for unemployment, and in another couple weeks, it'll be 30 million.
Exactly. We got to get these people back to work, John. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. And Apple and Google will partner on a new technology intended to curb the coronavirus spread. The tech giants are creating a digital contact tracing system powered by a network of smartphones to better help the public understand when they may have been exposed to the virus. The system will enable both iPhones and Android devices to anonymously broadcast signals to other nearby devices using Bluetooth and scan for beacons from other phones in proximity. Let's check in with our expert, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, this is an amazing technology. How does this work?
Well, it may not really work very well in practice. There are a lot of efforts going on now. This is just one of them, and there's others using the same kind of technology approaches to use smartphone-related data related to COVID-19, and they're not at all equivalent. In China, they have one of the most effective systems, but it's also one of the most draconian. You basically can't go anywhere there during this, you know, during the peak of the epidemic without having a smartphone and scanning QR codes and tracking of individuals, anyone you were near in the same location. One false move and the health cops could come after you. Israel has a very similar system, not as invasive, but they have essentially taken their cell phone tracking system that was designed for anti-terrorism, and they're now using it to track and control individuals related to COVID-19. Now, there are less invasive systems like the ones you've just discussed, and there's other organizations also working on Bluetooth-based apps and APIs. In some cases, these are APIs where apps would be created by other parties to access them. They all have different technical pluses and minuses and limitations, and I won't even try to get into details here, but the executive summary pretty much amounts to trying to figure out if anonymous opt-in apps, which is what we're basically talking about here with these kinds of apps here in the U.S., if they're anonymous and you have to choose to use them and you're not going to pass along the information about who the individuals are to the government, which most people don't want to have happen, are they really going to do any good? Bluetooth, for example, has a number of limitations because, for example, you could be standing far enough from someone's social distancing where you wouldn't even be a risk of infection, but you're still going to get a Bluetooth beacon. Bluetooth can go through walls, thin walls also. And the more fundamental question is, who is going to install it? I mean, are the people who you most want track, in theory, if you're going to do contact tracking, contact tracing, going to voluntarily install these? Remember, here in the U.S., of course, it's not like China. We aren't required by law to carry smartphones, to have them turned on, to have the GPS turned on, or to have other kinds of tracking devices turned on. I mean, unless you have a tracking ankle bracelet, right, locked around your ankle or something. Mm-hmm. So with due respect for good intentions, we kind of have to keep in mind that governments all through human history have shown an enormous aptitude for leveraging fearful situations toward the control of their populations. And I do have concerns that even these well-intentioned anonymous systems, and there are other ones too, using aggregated data from third-party mobile aggregators and things like that, that these systems may not really have a lot of utility in terms of solving the COVID-19 and other future potential epidemic problems we're facing, but they are whetting the appetite of governments to have more control over their populations and to have more tracking, more invasive tracking in ways that could be with us long beyond COVID-19.
Good point. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. Get up and start walking. The more you do it, the longer you may live. That's the main piece of advice from a new study that found that a higher daily step count is associated with lower mortality risk from all causes. So who needs that couch anyway? Indiana man waiting for $1,700 in his stimulus payment in his bank goes to his bank account, goes online, And what does he find? $8.2 million sitting there. He's got to give it back. Unbelievable. Story we have on our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. A mutant goat with two heads and mouths, which feed independently, has been born on a farm in the United States. The farmer was left stunned when one of her goats gave birth to a two-faced kid, which is alive and able to eat. The incredible four-eyed creature, born on a family farm in Wisconsin. Both mouths of the animal are eating. Amazing. Up next, plague of corruption. Kent Heckenlively back with us on Coast to Coast, and he is next. Get ready. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're going to have two guests for you tonight in this segment. And our first half guest will be Kent Heckenlively back with us on Coast to Coast, author of that he wrote with Dr. Judy Mikovits called The Plague of Corruption, Restoring Faith in the Promise of Science. Let me tell you a little bit about Kent. Science teacher, attorney, staff writer for the Green Med Info, and a founding contributor of The Age of Autism. In the summer of 2010 and 11, he attended the Teacher Research Academy at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, spending 8 weeks in a virus lab investigating the expression of microRNAs in a monkey model of Ebola infection. He was with me back in 2015, I believe, weren't you, Kent? And welcome back.
Oh, happy to be back, George.
Boy, I got to ask you something about this virus lab you were in, because we just had this story that we've been talking about for 3 weeks now that I think something's been manipulated in that Wuhan viral lab. You think that's possible?
Absolutely. You know, when the story first broke, one of the things that really bothered me in the narrative was that all you got from the mainstream media was this was a natural outbreak or it was an engineered bioweapon. And, you know, with my background as an attorney, you know, I like to have multiple narratives, okay?
That's right.
You know, we've got a set of facts. And I was thinking, why are there only two? Why is this tyranny of two ideas? Because it's just as easy that it could have been something that they were working on in the lab and it escaped. It didn't have to be a bioweapon. You know, this sort of research called gain of function goes on all the time. In fact, Judy Mikovits actually worked with a lot of gain of function research. And I think part of her journey has been the understanding that this type of research that she was actually very talented in is actually extremely dangerous. And we're not confident that scientists know what they're doing in their labs. And, you know, we may have nearly destroyed the world because of one of those mistakes.
Absolutely. I don't know why China didn't come clean and simply say, hey, we were doing this, we were experimenting, and it got loose.
Well, you know, I've got a certain perspective, which is, you know, since I have made this sort of my mission in life to look at science and the people working in it, I actually think that both in China and in the United States, we have something of a scientific elite, okay, that considers themselves above the regular rules and laws. So I think it's very possible that the president of China doesn't know what was going on there. I think they may be lying to him. I think that the United States has done a lot of this research, and probably President Trump doesn't know about us, or they lie or shade the truth. So I really think that the big message of plague of corruption is we really need to take our world back from the mad scientists who are currently running it. We need more transparency. We need them to tell us what they're doing, and we need independent investigators looking at this. I mean, one of the things that's been really interesting to me is to understand that Dr. Tony Fauci is one of the people who okayed millions of dollars going to this Wuhan Virology Institute to study coronavirus, and he's the one in charge of the effort.
Why doesn't he admit that to people?
It's I've seen it in some articles. People are starting to talk about it, and it drives me crazy. I want to pound my head against the wall because it's like putting OJ in charge of the murder investigation of his wife.
When this first started, Kent, and I had heard that there was a viral lab in Wuhan, I simply, and I've always said all my life, there are never coincidences. Things happen for a reason. You know, they just don't happen accidentally like this. And the fact that there was a lab in Wuhan and this broke in Wuhan, I put two and two together, not even being the scientist that I'm just the talk show host, and I think I'm right.
But
what we're just looking at is human nature, and I think that's one of the things that has gotten so unbalanced in our society, is that we look at scientists and we almost see them as a different species, Homo scientificus. Well, you know, with my background as an attorney, you know, the joke is always, if somebody says his mother loves him, get another opinion. Well, just because a scientist says something, you know, doesn't mean I necessarily buy it. And so I had very much the same reaction because, you know, I just asked the simple questions. So I looked at the data and it said, where did this bat virus come from? Oh, these are horseshoe bats. Oh, where do horseshoe bats live? Oh, about 600 miles away from Wuhan. Okay, I'm not thinking a little bat is flying 600 miles to Wuhan. But and then this story that they were being sold in the market.
That makes sense.
Has been discounted. And the only thing that makes sense is they had these horseshoe bats at the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
Geez, so tell us about the title of the book you wrote with Dr. Judy, Plague of Corruption.
You know, it's been an evolution for both Judy and I, because with what she discovered about XMRV and the trouble that she got into, you know, we had this kind of idea that there was this corruption around that research. And I think Plague of Corruption takes a broader picture because we found the same pattern of corruption happening in so many public health controversies, you know, like HIV, like Ebola, you know, the vaccine court. And Judy, you know, I always say that she's kind of like a scientific Forrest Gump, because she always tends to end up in these really interesting situations. And I, you know, as a writer, I'm just going like, oh my God, this is fantastic. You were in the middle of that? Let me write about that. So it's really her further adventures, but I think it takes a really broad view. And I really want to announce something that's kind of remarkable. The book came out today.
That's right.
And it has already run through its first edition hardcover on Amazon. So it's sold out on Amazon. You can get it on the Kindle. You can get it at Barnes & Noble and IndieBound. But this book is flying off the shelves quicker than toilet paper.
Well, and you can order it on Amazon and they'll get it to you, right?
And well, they're having a problem tonight. So I just want to warn everybody, because actually right now it says hardcover not available, and we don't know when we're going to get it. But our distributor, Simon & Schuster, is working like crazy, and they're like, we just need to get it through the Amazon system. So hopefully within, you know, 12 hours, you'll be able to order the second edition, and it'll be there. But if you can't, go either get it on the Kindle on Amazon, get it at Barnes & Noble, get it at IndieBound, Skyhorse Publishing, you can get it. Or, you know, just go back in a couple days to Amazon and it should be there.
Kent, forward in your book is by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's been on our program before. Is he truly against vaccines?
You know, it's a really interesting question because, you know, I jokingly say that in our movement, I always feel like Kennedy is sort of like Martin Luther King Jr. and I'm sort of like Malcolm X. So, you know, a little bit like fire and water. And when I gave him this book, I really was nervous because, you know, I didn't know.
You didn't know which way he was going to go, did you?
Yeah. And I was thinking like, oh, my God, this is Robert F. Kennedy. And, you know, what if he hates it? You know, what if he campaigns against it? Because and to his credit, he just got the book like crazy. And he has been so good on this. And I think what I did was I opened up a new window in his brain on the biological question, because he's been great about the mercury and the aluminum and the other chemicals in vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
But Judy really comes from a biological background. And so, and I think what I contributed to the book was this question, because I would always question Judy, you know, about the bigger picture. And so, you know, when she first found out that this mouse virus had jumped into people who have chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, and I said, well, where did it come from? Well, I don't know. And I did the research. I found out that vaccines were grown in mouse brain tissue. And then I asked the bigger question, should we ever grow viruses in animal tissue and then inject them into human beings? Because if we know that our own DNA is about 7% virus, well, we can assume that animals are about the same. So doesn't that mean in a lab dish, which is designed so that the immune system isn't working, that all these viruses can come out and play.
Well, and remember what they did in the 1950s with the simian monkey virus and the polio vaccine as well. Kent, we're going to bring Dr. Judy in our next segment, and then both of you will join us for phone calls next hour. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Kent Heckenlively will join us for phone calls in our next segment. With us now is Dr. Judy Mikovits, co-author of the book Plague of Corruption. She has spent her life training to be a research scientist, studied immunology, natural products chemistry, epigenetics, virology, and drug development. In just over 20 years, she rose from an entry-level lab technician to director of the Lab of Antiviral Drug Mechanisms at the National Cancer Institute, before leaving to direct the cancer biology program at a pharmaceuticals company in California. Then in 2006, she became attracted to the plight of patients with chronic fatigue syndrome and autism. In only 5 years, she developed the first neuroimmune institute from a concept to a reality and is primarily responsible for demonstrating the relationship between immune-based inflammation and these diseases. Judy, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thanks, George.
And what a time to come on a program to talk about what we're talking about tonight, huh?
Yeah, it just fits perfectly. The plague of corruption that is COVID-19 is exactly that last line, understanding that it's not the infection, but the overactive immune response, the dysregulation of the immune response leading to all the damage and of the person and ultimately, in some cases, death.
Kent almost knocked me off my chair when he talked about Dr. Anthony Fauci having a relationship with that Wuhan viral lab. We'll talk about that in a second. But you had some interactions with him early on in your career, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I was part of the team in 1983 at 25 years old, working with Dr. Frank Rossetti, who discovered the first human cancer-causing and disease-causing retrovirus, HTLV-1. So we had actually isolated HIV from the original patients from Luc Montagnier, Nobel laureate Luc Montagnier in France. We confirmed his results, had it in publication. Frank was out of town. I answered the phone one day, and it's Tony Fauci on the phone saying, you know, give me and Bob Gallo the paper. And I said, no can do. It's in press. It's confidential. He threatened to fire me for insubordination, which never troubles me. It happened a lot in my life. And basically, Frank came back into town. He was kind of bullied by Fauci into giving it to him. And basically, Fauci held up the publication, literally costing millions their lives as this epidemic raged through the susceptible populations, the gays, the IV drug users, in a continent of Africa. And here then Gallo copied our work because he wasn't smart enough to isolate the virus. And they put it out first. And that created like a decades long war. And Ronald Reagan totally bungled it, again, with Fauci standing right there. And this is 1984. So here's 1986. And the whole rich
standing right there again.
Right, standing right there. We won't make your vaccine, when the shots were causing great damage. In the case of the DTP shot. So we won't make your vaccines. You're going to have a pandemic, Zika, Ebola of 2014 and Zika standing next to Obama. We're going to save the world from the next outbreak. And he, threatened President Trump. You're going to have a big outbreak, said that in 2017. And here he is again. And the problem is this time, we kind of caught him because he made the real zoonosis, the contagious retrovirus. That is a cancer-causing mouse retrovirus in the human virome that most likely got there from a contaminated blood supply, which we proved in the summer of 2011. And because I refused to say this wasn't true, you know, poof, Judy's job and all fundings removed by Tony Fauci. He covered the whole thing up, directed the confiscation of my notebook, my work, and literally locked me out of science.
Jeez, Judy. I mean, what do you think every day you see him standing up at these sessions on updating us on the coronavirus?
It's horrific. I pray every day that Trump knows he's lying and that the vaccines are driving these past pandemics and this coronavirus, as you discussed. He funded the studies with Wuhan, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, which he's led since 1984, funded these. And right there at Fort Detrick, where the National Cancer Institute was, in that biosafety level 4, the cell line known as Vero Monkey Kidney Cells, you know, they provide. They sent the cell line back and forth between the Wuhan Biosafety Level 4 and the USAMRID, U.S. Army Research Institute and Infectious Disease Institute, which is right across the street from the Cancer Institute, and which in 1999, my job was to teach Ebola how to infect human cells without killing them, which led to the 2014 Ebola which killed 21,000 Liberians, and this was a mutated virus, as you and Kent were discussing earlier. It was a mutated virus that came out of Fort Detrick and was, you know, in a vaccination program that, you know, Gates and you know, the United States were leading to take those pesky black people off the diamonds and oil and cover up the fraud of the MMR, that vaccine data which showed MMR could cause autism.
Well, Judy, do you think it's appropriate that he continue to be a spokesperson for our government and advising the president when he funded this lab in Wuhan? And I wonder if he's come clean and told President Trump he did that. Or is that well known within government?
Oh, no, it's not well known. And you have to know how to read a scientific paper, because you see where the cell lines come from. You see where who funds the study matters. And so it was a
It's conceivable President Trump doesn't know that he did that.
It is conceivable that President Trump does not know that he did that.
I think he'd fire him on the spot if he finds out about this. And he's bound to find out about it by tomorrow morning.
I think he should have been fired on the spot a long time ago.
It's a conflict of interest, isn't it?
Absolutely. He holds the patent for the GP41, which is the envelope protein of HIV. There are envelope sequences. There are these sequences in the Wuhan strain, in this coronavirus strain known as SARS-CoV-2. There are HIV sequences.
What is, as a scientist and as a professional, what is your opinion of this coronavirus based on what we think we know?
I think this coronavirus is accelerated evolution of it in lab culture, in these experiments, in these tissue cultures. That's how we do it. I think it's got an expanded host range, so it's not acting clinically like a normal flu. It should be just a simple mild upper respiratory tract infection, but what we're in fact seeing is, you know, coagulopathies, that's blood disease, bleeding disorders, you know, clots, deep vein thrombosis, and, you know, that's what retroviruses do. So I don't think this coronavirus is the causative agent of COVID-19, and in fact, I think even worse, it may be the mouse, the XMRVs, and this is a big cover-up. We're calling everything COVID-19, coronavirus infectious disease. We're calling this a causative agent. Viruses, essentially, HIV does not cause AIDS. You need other opportunistic infections to destroy the immune system, is our 40 years worth of research. And so this doesn't act like a normal coronavirus. They don't do that. They don't infect white blood cells. They don't cause platelet disorders like ITP, idiopathic thrombocytopenia. It's a bleeding disorder. You can literally bleed out. We're seeing clinical symptoms saying, oh, there's a encephalitis. There's associated with it. Well, coronaviruses don't infect the brain. They can't, don't infect brain cells. They, you know, so there's something else going on, and I think there's a huge cover up, and I really do think now that the it's an attempt to literally the people that will die are the people with, you know, HIVs and XMRVs and the people, because we already have those underlying inflammatory diseases. And I say we because we know these mouse cancer and neuroimmune disease causing viruses like Parkinson's, like chronic fatigue syndromes. We know those viruses became contagious in 2011. This is what our research showed, that you could literally breathe and cough cancer through these mouse viruses.
Jeez.
So I think COVID-19 is the trigger that's going to detonate and kill all of those who are infected. And lab workers, first responders, the military, this is where we found the mouse viruses. And these are the people that are getting the most seriously ill, and they look like chronic Lyme disease.
Judy, the country is basically shut down. We've distanced ourselves from people, yet people are still getting infected, and some people are dying. It doesn't appear to be working. What do you think?
I don't think we should be distanced from people, because that's not how these viruses spread. I think the viruses entered the population from the influenza vaccines, and there are publications that show it's a technological term called viral interference. Normally, you can block other RNA viruses with another, like an influenza infection, but what the influenza, where the hardest hit areas were where they are pushing the flu shots, and their viral interference actually promotes coronavirus infection. So the vaccines, the flu vaccines that Tony Fauci said, you run out and get, I can't get toilet paper, but I can get a free flu shot in the grocery store.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Truly unbelievable.
It's infection from within.
How do we put a handle around this and start to wrestle it away?
Well, I think we need to, again, fire Tony Fauci immediately, close the CDC, open up the, you know, let the healthy people go back to work. Healthy people don't spread viruses. You know, let the people, you know, go back to work. Use the immunity we know we've got from recovering convalescent people, as we did in the Ebola situation when Dr. Kent Brantley got infected and recovered. His antibodies were used to treat others. We have interferon alpha. We have the Plaquenil, $5.50 a dose for 1,000 people, with a $1,600 vial of human alpha interferon. And Merck took it off the market. Well, of course they did. We don't need a vaccine. Put everybody back to work and protect the vulnerable, and we could do it at $5 a day.
Why would someone like Dr. Fauci want to fund a lab in Wuhan, China, when he could fund any lab in the United States? What? Why there?
Good question, because at the time in the United States, these gain-of-function studies were illegal.
And what do you mean by these studies were illegal?
In 2013, the head of the NIH, Francis Collins, said, and many other virologists like myself said, these studies are very risky, and this was published in Nature in 2015. And so they said, let's stop doing this kind of work, because there's a chance we could create a pathogen that would spread around the world like a SARS-CoV-2. You know, that would be more pathogenic, not attenuated, not less pathogenic. And so, but that work was, you know, and so he said it's illegal to do those studies. Ever so quietly, Francis Collins lifted that ban in 2017 and didn't tell many people about it, but we caught it. Between, you know, 2013 and 17, these studies shouldn't have been done, and they were done in China, and they were also done in the United States. He funded, this was a collaborative effort with a group in North Carolina, a Dr. Barrick, B-A-R-I-C, and a doctor in Harvard. And, of course, there were some studies going on in Canada as well.
If you were at one of these coronavirus briefings as a reporter, and Dr. Fauci was there talking about what he does every day, what would you ask him when you had your moment to ask him a question?
I would say how many of these viruses have you created, and what's the purpose, and how much money are you making on your patent? So is the goal to, you know, scare everybody like they've done with the presidents and people staying home that we don't have immune systems? I'd say, you know, when are you going to come clean and tell the truth?
And you're serious about this. These are pretty serious charges, Judy.
Absolutely, and we made them in both books. In the foreword, in the new material I put in the front of Plague of Corruption, the paperback, it says Tony Fauci on every other line. Ian Lipkin, the people that he's paying to do this, Robert Redfield, the head of the CDC, Deborah Birx, they were caught. Literally, and should have been convicted a long time ago of crimes, of fraud. This is commission fraud.
This is unbelievable. Judy, we're going to hit a break. I'm going to bring Kent back as well. We'll talk a little bit more, but we'll take phone calls next. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Judy Mikovits with us and Kent Heckenlively. And both of you will be sharing a line, so feel free to jump in anytime you want when we're having this conversation. And we'll be taking calls with our incredible listeners in just a moment. Kent, did you have an opportunity to hear some of the chat with Judy?
Absolutely. Loved it.
It is frightening, some of the things she was saying.
You know, another thing that I don't think people realize is Tony Fauci is 79 years old right now, and he's been in the same job since 1984. That's 36 years, almost as long as J. Edgar Hoover was head of the FBI, and we know about all the abuses that happened under his reign. So I don't think people really understand the stranglehold that Tony Fauci has had on our public health in all that time.
I'm in shock over the funding of the Wuhan lab with our taxpayers' money.
Well, that's why I talk about this scientific elite that I think exists above governments. And so, you know, I think it's entirely likely that the Chinese president doesn't understand what's really going on. I think it's entirely possible that President Trump doesn't really know what's going on, because these scientists, you know, they stay in these positions for years and years, and they just amass this incredible power. And, you know, they're like our modern-day priests, and we don't question them. And we need to question them much more aggressively.
Judy, I wanted to ask you again about the flu vaccine. Are you saying that those who have gotten coronavirus probably had the flu vaccine, or that those who take the flu vaccine are more susceptible to getting the coronavirus?
Both. Coronaviruses are in all animals, and the vaccines can be contaminated with them. And yes, the papers show they are more susceptible, depending on what kind of vaccine, anywhere from 36% to 440% more susceptible.
Why doesn't the mainstream media report on this stuff?
Well, this is the criminal of the public health and Tony Fauci and the CDC and the FDA. Fire Fauci, close the CDC and the FDA, get rid of all the criminals, you'll balance the budget. That's a lot of taxpayers' money beyond just funding a Wuhan lab. It's been funding these kinds of debacles, as I mentioned, with the literally the fraud and waste of millions of dollars and killing of millions with these failed HIV vaccines. They know the flu vaccines drive these, coronaviruses. They don't interfere. They actually make you more susceptible. And so what happened in Italy? You had a really dangerous flu vaccine this year in Italy.
You are correct. I saw a YouTube video. It was done in 2017. I just saw it last week with Tony Fauci, and he was talking about a pandemic would occur under this administration, and he was saying this 3 years ago.
Correct.
He was speaking to some organization.
Correct. I think it was the Gates Foundation, and they actually, the CDC put out a job request November 15th to May 15th for quarantine officers in every state in Puerto Rico.
It's crazy.
Pandemic, yeah.
Crazy. Kent, are we going to be able to fight our way out of this?
Yeah, you know, what I think is really great about what we did in Plague of Corruption is we've got an entire chapter called The Way Forward, and what really excites me is when I asked Judy these questions about, like, okay, if we, you know, got the right people in, if they started doing things, you know, could we look forward to things in a year or two? And Judy says, no, we have stuff right now that is being suppressed that we could do for all of these suffering people. I mean, the hydroxychloroquine is a perfect example. God, that, you know, as far as I understand, I haven't talked directly to Judy about this, but there are things that are available, and we know that they work and they're safe, and we could, you know, that's why I'm encouraging all of your listeners to put a hashtag together called hashtag Fire Fauci and hashtag Hire Mikovits, because we need people like Judy at the very top, because she'll tell the president where the corruption is, and she is relentless, because what she cares about is people. I mean, that's been her just overwhelming passion. And so she's a brilliant scientist. I'm just so honored to work with her. And she is a fierce champion for people's health. And we need people like that at the top, rather than people like Fauci, who've been there for 36 years covering things up.
Well, and importantly, he's with those drugs, with, you know, he stopped. You know, oh, it's okay, no travel bans, you can just do whatever you want with China. And then when the FDA, we knew the hydroxychloroquine worked. We know that alpha interferon works. It costs nothing. It's on the WHO's list of essential medicines for 70 years. And Tony Fauci does what he did, done for 40 years, and that's say, oh, that's just anecdotal. We need more research. We don't need research. You've never made an effective or safe vaccine for any coronavirus, for SARS, despite 20 years of effort, and or for any retrovirus or any other RNA virus. So you've got things right now, and we're just going to take the time while the world dies, just like we did with HIV.
Judy, can we fight coronavirus on our own with our own immune system?
Absolutely. And it's a simple fix. It's simple, natural products. Vitamin C, like I said, just stimulate your alpha interferons, cannabinoids.
I'm taking vitamin D, zinc, and some quinine water, just a little bit.
Correct.
Not a lot of it, just a little bit.
Correct. A little bit of everything, and vitamin C. You're exactly right. Vitamin D, vitamin A, you know, healthy food. Go to bed and wake up with full immunity, and you'll be fine the next time. You'll be immune.
They say that if you're on a beta blocker for the heart, if you drink a lot of quinine, you could get a little irregular heartbeat. Did you hear that?
I don't know that. What I do know, there is a blood pressure medicine called Losartan that has a marvelous side effect of calming the inflammatory response that is at the heart of the disease through TGF-beta, so balancing and normalizing it. So we know enough about these drugs to switch these in people who are at risk.
I'm also taking turmeric, and I think that's a wonder for anti-inflammatory effects.
Absolutely, and cannabis, and so we can actually make a safe and effective vaccine to end all pandemics using interferon, peptide T, which we developed in Frank Frassetti's lab with Candace Pert, in Candace Pert's lab as well, you know, 20 years ago for AIDS. Modulate the macrophage, right there in a capsule with cannabis and curcumin. Drive it right to the heart of the bone marrow, producing the antibody-producing cells. Normalize the responses.
If we could get Tony Fauci back on this program, not he hasn't been here yet, but on this program, would you debate him?
Oh, absolutely. I've debated John Coffin three times and won every time.
Judy is fearless. Judy will stand on any platform and debate anybody about her science.
I debate with science, and it doesn't lie. Data doesn't lie.
Judy, did you see this coming, this virus?
Yes. I saw not necessarily the coronavirus, but absolutely this book, Plague of Corruption, predicts it. We look like prophets.
Yeah, we've been having everybody say, who's read early at review copies, you guys are prophets. This is a prophetic book. And I really also have to say that this book seems to be divinely inspired in terms of its timing to come out, because originally it was supposed to come out in November, and because Robert Kennedy got involved in a couple of other things, it got kicked to April, and, you know, Judy and I were so upset about that, and, you know, we never expected expected that our virus book would come out in the middle of a pandemic.
That's timing, incredible timing, isn't it? Jeez.
It really is divine timing. And the writing of the book, I just have to say, I felt like it kind of came through me, not from me. And Judy and I are both, we're Christians, we're very religious, and, we're humble before God, humble before nature. And it feels like this is a book that needs to be in the world right now.
All right, let's go to our callers, Linda in Mississippi, to get things started. Linda, go ahead with your question, and then I'll point it either to Kent or Judy. Go ahead.
Okay.
Or both.
My husband was very susceptible to the flu, and he would have it several times a season. And this started when we married in 1962. I didn't have it till I was 30, but I believed in the flu shot. So he got Parkinson's dementia, and he didn't get the flu shot that year. He was in hospice, and they quit giving them, and I got very upset. But in January, he got a fever in January 15, and we took him to the emergency room, and they had said he had type A influenza and he had pneumonia. But anyway, he did pass away 5 or 6 days later. So I wanted to know how. I heard one of them relate the flu to the Parkinson's, but I didn't understand it. I wonder if they could explain that to me.
Judy, could you help her out there?
Sure, because the influenza infection or the vaccine, which is an attenuated an injection, which they give elderly much more, 4 times the dose, those cause inflammation. They're driving a powerful immune response. That's their job, so that you develop an immunity as if you had the disease, as if you had the infection, and then you make an antibody, and then the next time you see influenza, you won't get as sick. So it seems that since your husband had many occasions, Parkinson's disease is an inflammatory disease of the brain, and it's actually also of the endocannabinoid system. So it was his susceptibility to influenza. So he shouldn't have been, vaccinated, because he's different than you, and it was driving the inflammatory process. So every time he got the flu, he did more tissue damage because the flame got higher. It was like throwing gasoline on the fire.
Are you opposed to all vaccines, Judy and Kent?
I'm not opposed to any vaccine. I mentioned that I made the first immune therapy in 1980, and that was alpha interferon. I'm opposed to untested, unsafe vaccines, and I can make a safe and effective vaccine right now in a pill form. But again, I've been kicked out of science forever. My whole thesis of my life is we can educate the immune system to prevent and treat infectious and chronic disease.
Are you considered a rebel, Judy? I mean, if I were to talk to some doctor, some infectious doctor, and say, "Do you know Dr. Judy Mikovits?" Would he go, "Oh my God, not her"? What would the reaction be?
My colleagues would know my hard work in my career. Anybody who knew me would know that my name is associated with integrity and paradigm-changing discoveries.
Good for you. First-time caller, Ms. D. in Louisiana. Welcome to the program, Ms. D.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I've been
trying
for 3 weeks.
I'm glad you got through.
Yes. May I speak now?
Yes.
Oh, I want to thank you for, providing a way for us to tell things that we don't know who to tell, we don't know who to call.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Possible. You make that possible for us, and I thank you for that, for the opportunity.
Thank you.
But what I want to share with the listening audience and you tonight and your guests is that almost 2 years ago, a friend of mine told me that there was a meeting of the minds, and who that consisted of, I don't really know, but to me it seemed like some leaders, in a meeting. So they decided that it was the world was overpopulated, and they were going to do something about that. And he said that they would target the old people and another group. I don't remember the other group that he mentioned, but I know it wasn't black people. I'm black. And he didn't mention black people. He said, I think he told me that it was like the younger, the younger people. I don't know if that meant infants or teenagers, what age. But, and I just wanted to share, you know, with you tonight what he said. And
all right, you know, Kent, we've heard a lot that, you know, there's a group out there, the globalists, would love population control. Have you ever heard that?
You know, I have heard it, and, you know, I fall back on my legal education, and I say, you know, when I look at the data points, you know, I could understand coming to that conclusion, and yet it could also be that there is just such extreme stupidity and silo thinking that this is the inevitable result. So, like Napoleon, he said, never subscribe to a conspiracy, which can as easily be explained by stupidity. So I keep all options open.
Judy, this coronavirus seems to kill, one, older people quicker than younger people, and two, just on the numbers I've been seeing, it seems that more African Americans are dying from this than Caucasians. Is that true?
That is true. In fact, yesterday I was on a podcast called Black Health with Sheila Ely and Sumaya Simone, and we talked about that because those who are susceptible have type 1 diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and they have to, you know, they eat, they have less resources, so they're much more heavily vaccinated, and have a lot of GMO, a lot of glyphosate, which destroys glutathione, which is really important as an intracellular antioxidant, really a frontline defense for coronaviruses. So yes, it is true, and those people were enraged also that they're testing vaccines already in Africa, and seven children.
Jeez, that's seven children have died in Africa on tested vaccines. Jeez.
Yeah, for this coronavirus.
For coronavirus.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad.
And in fact, tonight Fox News just reported that of the last year's 35,000 flu deaths, most of those were vaccinated. So that supports vaccines driving these pandemics. And the vaccinated are the military, you know, and the lab workers, the first responders. These are the people we should be protecting, not destroying their immune system.
City of New York just pumped in an extra several thousand people of deaths into the coronavirus death numbers, even though they don't know how they died. They're assuming that's what they had.
And this is horrible because this is confounding things. You die, you don't necessarily die with an infection and from or by the infection. And the two are totally different. And this is the corruption of this Deborah Birx and how they're counting everybody. If you walk in the hospital with a cough or a flu, you get, and nurses have told me that, and doctors here in California.
Hold on, Judy. Hold on. We'll come back and talk more about this with our final segment with both of you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Kent Heckenlively and Judy Mikovits as we're talking about their work, Plague of Corruption, which just came out today. And you'll be able to get it eventually because it's selling like hotcakes right now. We'll get to your calls in a second. Judy, do you think this coronavirus was something that just was a horrible mistake that went very, very wrong or something intentional?
I think the data show it's intentional.
Oh, boy, that's what I feared, and that's what I thought back in December. Now, how would I get to that conclusion? I'm not a scientist. I didn't have any data like you folks did, but my gut told me when I found out that it was in Wuhan, China, and that there was a viral lab there, I just put two and two together. Is that common sense?
Yeah, and actually that their story made no sense. How do you get to 190 countries from a seafood market? And when those, and in that original paper, most of the people didn't come from the seafood market, or at least half of them. So there had to be another source. And so, and you can't spread around the world that fast simply from, you know, people from human to human transmission. And again, the flu vaccines are driving these pandemics.
Ken, go ahead, Ken.
I think one of the things that Judy has made clear to me is that these vaccines are making people so vulnerable to these viruses. And so we have a really an immune population, and then you have something like Corona's come around, which can just devastate communities.
One of my doctors, Judy, years ago, got the flu vaccine, and he came down with that syndrome, Beyer's syndrome, and he was never the same after that. Yeah.
Correct.
Never the same. How many people got that from the shot?
They get a lot of that. In fact, all the way back to the swine flu of 1976, there was a video showing, I think it was Dan Rather, and then there was good reporting, and they showed that the swine flu was nothing, that they predicted this big thing, but the vaccines caused Guillain-Barré, the paralysis, in many, many people, and they never got their lives back.
Was SARS a warm-up act to what's happening now?
One of many.
One of many.
Zika, Ebola. MERS, swine flu, bird flu, one of many.
Oh, would you say that they succeeded this time?
No, they've destroyed the entire program because people are waking up and realizing, with these lockdowns, all they need is natural good food, immunity, like you said, a little vitamin A, D, C, just good health, and we'll take over our own health, and it'll end the vaccine program forever and close down the plague of corruption that is our public health, our HHS. This nothing about keeping people away or wearing masks does anything to protect anybody. Keep walking on the beach, you're kidding me. Viruses don't spread through the air. If you have to amplify a zillion times a piece of RNA out of the back of your nose with a Q-tip, how am I going to cough that on somebody when I'm healthy and I'm not coughing? The mask is control, and it only hurts you. So I'm telling everybody, take it off.
Well, they've created the greatest hysteria I've ever seen. Would you agree with that?
Correct, and that's hugely immune suppressing. That's more damaging than everything. Yes, they created the hysteria.
That's why our book, Plague of Corruption, is the antidote to this hysteria.
When did you start writing the book, even though it came out today? When did you start writing it?
I think we started writing it about 18 months ago.
And at that time, there was no coronavirus, so you obviously saw something. Judy?
All I can say is this really has felt divinely inspired from the beginning. And as much as there's this hysteria, I think it wakes people up because they're going to demand answers. Because what has frustrated me as a science writer over all these years is I bring up all these points and people will just say, oh, that's an interesting point. I'm like, I want to beat my head against the wall because I want to say, well, find the answer. I've raised the question. I've given you some data. Show me that I'm right or I'm wrong. And they just kind of like, oh, well, I don't know. That's a great question. And I think what's going to happen now is people are going to demand answers.
I think so, Sue. And Judy, are you clairvoyant or what did you see here?
No, what we see here is in the last few years, what has gone on TV? Oh, this is going to be the worst influenza season. It's bad, bad, bad. The shot's only 19% effective, but get it anyway. And so people were having terrible coughs. I think this coronavirus has been here for a couple of years, probably released from those labs several years ago, and that many people may be immune, and that's why they won't do the proper test. PCR test is absolutely the wrong test. And then, of course, scientists like Timothy Cunningham at the CDC, who said, wow, that shot killed people. I'm afraid of that. All of a sudden, he disappears and is, found months later in the Chattahoochee River or somewhere, working right there in Atlanta, a doctor like myself who was suicided for daring to expose this. So it's not clairvoyance, unfortunately. It's experience.
One of the things that I think is really troubling is that, we see what's happening in China. We see doctors and journalists who raised issues suddenly going missing. We don't know where they are. We think that this is just something that happens in China. And what Judy and I have found is that, people like Dr. Jeff Bradstreet, people like Dr. Timothy Cunningham, who seem to be renegades and rebels, suddenly they go missing and are found dead under unusual circumstances. So we really think that one of the big problems is this scientific elite that operates without transparency. And I think that, in the United States, there are similar crimes against independent researchers, same as there are in China.
To the phones we go. Bill in Los Angeles to get us started here. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, George?
Good.
I just happened to be a Columbia University J school grad in 1985 when Dr. Fauci was kind of the front man for the HIV epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of parallels that I see with what's going on now. But when I was listening to Judy talk, and I heard you say, you know, this is amazing, I was thinking the same thing as a former journalist. I wrote for the Times and the Register in the 80s and 90s. And I wanted to ask Judy, I mean, the scientific explanations she's giving sound reasonable to me, and I don't have a dog in this fight. And I'm just curious, has Dr. Fauci responded either with some kind of legal threat or any kind of response in terms of the way you're characterizing him?
Not one word, because we have all the data, all the emails, all the proof, and not one word to either book in almost, 8 years?
Court action would have forced you to bring out all the data, and I don't think he wants that out there. That would be my guess. Thanks, Bill.
Exactly.
Steve in Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hey, I had a comment and then a question for Judy.
Okay.
My comment was I didn't think that two-faced goat was all that weird, because I know there's hundreds and hundreds of them in Washington, D.C. And my question for Judy is, it seems like that this affects a lot of people that are in their 65 and up, and that would put a pretty good savings, a lot of deaths there. That'd put a pretty good savings on the Social Security program.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something. I looked at some numbers today, and from 60 to 80 plus, it is almost most of the victims. Judy? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband is 81 years old and he has COPD from bacterial pneumonia in his 30s. And I'm like, please, honey, don't go out of the house. You know, they're going to come in here. If you walked into a hospital, his lungs would look like that. They'd say COVID-19. They'd inject him with the flu vaccine and kill him. And so I'm like, honey, please don't leave. I take him with me. Yes, they are, you know, they've already stolen our Social Security. He's been on it for 20 years. So you know, if that's what we're doing. We're targeting, they're already sick. Everybody has either high blood pressure or some of those conditions, taking one or so medication, cardiac diseases. Inflammation is at the heart of heart attack. You know, it drives heart attacks. And so, yes, they are the most vulnerable. And now they're talking about pulling sick people out of their home. Yeah. Oh, great. You know, so they'll get both of us because, you know, I'm 62. And of course, the lab workers were infected with XMRVs, the cancer-causing viruses. I seroconverted. That means I was clearly exposed, made an antibody in 2010.
Judy, if you were sitting next to somebody with coronavirus and they were breathing on you, would you panic? Would you get up and run away? What would you do?
No, because coronaviruses, you know, they can breathe on me. But no, I wouldn't panic. I wouldn't run away any more than probably the most likely opportunity for me to get infected is if I was taking care of somebody who is sick. I isolated HIV from the saliva of very sick men, but never from a healthy carrier.
Interesting. Dolly in Louisiana. Dolly, go for it.
Hi. Hi. And it's a long-time listener, but you're always spot on with your guest.
Thank you.
Always. I have one question, and then I wanted you to repeat what you were saying for to build up your immune system.
Okay, we'll do that.
My question is, I was raised on a farm, and I remember hoof and mouth disease, and that went into the soil, and they keep saying this is going to come back.
You're breaking up a little bit, but can this recur, Judy, next season?
Sure, we're exposed to coronaviruses all the time, but if you've had it and you've recovered, you've built an immunity, so you won't get sick. We'll always have to protect.
Well now they say in Korea, 100 people who were infected and got rid of it got reinfected again. So what happened there?
You don't clear totally the viruses, and you wake up the dormant pathogens as the immune system is compromised, as you're exposed. That's what happens every year. But if you've ever had the flu or you've ever had a flu shot, you're as protected as you're going to be. So you will not die. Sure, they get reinfected. You get re-exposed.
What is your immune system cocktail again for her?
Immune system cocktails. Anti-inflammatories. You mentioned curcumin, natural products, type 1 interferon, vitamin A, vitamin D, Colloidal silver.
Zinc, especially. I love zinc.
Zinc especially, because absolutely. So zinc in your nose, just keep your mucosal surfaces healthy.
What are you doing, Kent, for yourself?
I'm doing interferon alpha, vitamin C, and I like your thing about vitamin D and curcumin. So I'm going to pick those up soon.
And drink a little quinine. You get that out of tonic water. Just look at the label. Make sure that it says quinine included. And with the zinc, the quinine is what is in that anti-malaria drug that President Trump keeps touting.
Right. Right. Actually picked some of that up the other day, but I've got it in my closet. I haven't taken it yet.
Yeah, don't drink a lot of it. Just a couple swigs. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Dave Vaughn in South Central California is with us. Hey, Dave Vaughn, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, man? I just wanted to let you know I love your show.
Thank you, sir.
3 years I've been trying to get on here, and it's kind of funny that within, 6 minutes is going to be my birthday. So.
Well, happy upcoming.
They're going to be that happy because everybody got to be away from each other, but
yeah,
it's okay. But what I wanted to say was about, I'd say maybe around April 1st, we got the news from President Trump and Gavin Bang-Your-Wife Newsom, shout out to Jericho Green for that name, about how California is going to be really hit bad with this wave of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think, well, how can that be? Because California already practiced social distancing from social media and technology. We've always been away from each other, so that's probably why we're doing so good right now. But then I started to think, and something happened to me. It's what, spring that's happening right now, and within spring, flowers blooming, birds are chirping, all that stuff, and then summer comes next. But then the worst enemy of all of us is coming through, and that's when it hit me, when I started getting bit up by mosquitoes. And isn't it true that when mosquitoes bite, they can carry that disease, just like what happened in Brazil with the Zika virus? And since everybody is keeping themselves social distance, they're not really cleaning out the places where water is grown, where mosquitoes is born.
Well, what mosquitoes can do, one, they can pass on malaria. I don't think you have to worry about that. I don't think, though, Judy, mosquitoes can carry the coronavirus.
No, not usually.
Which is good. But why did God make mosquitoes? Why did he make mosquitoes? Devon, thank you for that.
The mosquito.
We're going to come up in just a moment and wrap things up for both of you. But Kent and Judy, thank you for being on the program. We really appreciate it. You're both very gutsy to come forward with the plague of corruption. Keep in touch with both of us, would you?
And put that hashtag out, hashtag Fire Fauci, hashtag Hire Mikovits.
Interested. I'd love to see Judy on those daily coronavirus briefings, to be sure. Up next, we're talking about black magic on Coast to Coast AM.